For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Oklahoma schools, teachers, parents, students, and even public workers are getting ready for a walkout in about 2 weeks if lawmakers don't pass a raise for teachers and state employees by April 1st. Meanwhile, lawmakers are throwing around a plethora of ideas to fund the raises, and one attempt even hit the Senate floor and failed on Wednesday. Neva, do you think the legislature is going to be able to avoid this walkout?
I think it's very questionable at this point. I mean, they continue to come up with all of these efforts inside the Capitol to craft some sort of bill, but the votes just aren't there. I mean, everything that seems to be, that they put forward is something that only has enough support to just kind of get it to the board, but no votes to really get it past the finish line. And so I think it's this level of frustration that we've talked about all along, and really how this strike really grew out of, kind of Facebook frustration is what I would call it. I mean, it took on a life of its own, and now it seems to be almost spinning out of control in terms of the level of support that it's getting in some circles, and yet I think it's getting some backlash in others. I mean, I think what we're beginning to hear is that the public, who by and large was supportive of efforts and the need for teachers to have a pay raise, now see this kind of all encompassing. Let's continue to up the ante, the $10,000, the $10,000 figure versus $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000, and all of these different numbers flying around. And I think it's going to, when the dust settles, it's going to be interesting to see what really has happened.
Ryan.
I think it's inevitable. I think that there will be a walkout. I think that the walkout will be joined by public employees. I don't think there's any way that this legislature can get its act together. I mean, they have demonstrated over the last several sessions, but the last two in particular, or one and a half anyways, new levels of incompetence, their inability to move any sort of revenue measure with the votes necessary. Putting the revenue, and just to backtrack for a moment, the revenue necessary to meet the demands of teachers here, you may seem extraordinary, but it's really not. I mean, it's, David Blatt has talked about how it's one of the easiest things in the world to, come up with the money necessary to pay for these things. Gross production tax, in capital gains tax, loopholes. There are any number of ways out there that we can increase the revenue without largely hurting lower middle income in Oklahomans. We could have a mix in there with fuel and cigarette tax, but the bulk of that could go to Oklahomans that could afford to pay for the services that these teachers are demanding, these public employees deserve. I don't think there's any way that we get around this. And then it's like the lawmakers really haven't learned their lesson. The Senate Wednesday night meets in this late night session. Governments that meet late at night, whenever there aren't reporters there and reporters have to rush back to the Capitol, that's not the way democracy is supposed to work. And they knew that this plan fell short. It didn't have anything in there for support staff. It didn't have anything in there for classroom funding. It didn't have long-term education funding solvency that teachers are demanding. This was a gimmick, and I think that they thought that they could put this out there and everybody would just go away. The teachers are a lot smarter than the lawmakers here, and the lawmakers need to stop insulting teachers or we'll never get out of this mess.
How long do you think this thing is going to last?
I think it's anybody's guess. I mean, I wouldn't really have an educated guess on that, because I think it is so fluid, and I don't think anyone knows. I think that's the problem, is we can't get all of the players, to the table once again. I mean, we're not just talking about lawmakers. We're talking about, all of the interested and affected parties, and try to come up with some resolution. And I think there is this notion that somehow somebody's just going to magically, pull something out and be able to stop this. But I would agree with Ryan. I think the train's rolling pretty fast down the tracks now, and it's going to be very difficult to see a good end to this.
I think if you add the incompetence of the legislature with the determination of the teachers, I think that we should look for, and throw in their public employees, mm-hmm. and these are folks that haven't had a raise in over 12 years. I think whenever you add those factors together, this is indefinite. I mean, I think that we should be ready for a walkout that could last a month or more. That's where we're at right now. And it's interesting. I think we're at this new age, this golden age in protest. We saw right after the Trump administration, people that would gather on the lawns of capitals and in parks, people go to the rotunda for lobby days and stuff like that. Those are the most convenient ways to protest your legislature because they can ignore you. But now what we're seeing is protest that actually disrupts the very services that they're trying to provide. And we're seeing it everything from the walkout over gun violence in schools to teachers and public employees here in Oklahoma, West Virginia. This is the kind of protest that's effective, and I think that lawmakers are they would be wise to pay attention.
I think the other part of this, though, is the reaction that the public is going to have long term. If we're talking a month, we're talking a couple of weeks, whatever it is, what's going to be the reaction from these parents who have kids and are having to, you know, kind of change their, you know, work schedules, change their lives to deal with to deal with this disruption? And I think the fact that, you know, while we talk about the need for teacher pay raise for state employees having not had pay raise in many years, let's look at it on the private sector side. How many Oklahomans can say, how long has it been since I've had a pay raise? And so I think there's going to be more give and take in this equation than we're seeing right now, when it's all just virtually one-sided in terms of the discussion on the raises.
To the private sector Oklahomans, unionize, unionize, unionize. You get to walk out too. You get to demand better wages and working conditions.
I still think
as
we
well.
Have a climate in Oklahoma, though, where the sentiment toward that type of kind of union mindset is not really a statewide, you know, largely across all sectors sentiment among most Oklahomans. And so I think that's where some backlash could also
right,
come.
Right, but if I want a pay raise, actually I'm a public worker, but if I work in a private job and I want a pay raise, I go to my boss, I ask for a pay raise. If I'm a public school teacher, I can't go to Governor Fallon and say, I need a pay raise. That's why
you... Well, you can. She just hasn't been listening to it. The public backlash, one of the things, I think that the public backlash is really going to grow more and more against lawmakers. There's a high school student, he was a senior, I can't remember his name right now, and I apologize for that, but he's got a Facebook post that's gone viral saying, you know, I stand with these teachers. Even if there's an inconvenience or a disservice to me now, I'm doing it for future generations so that they don't have to suffer. And they've gone to the Capitol and they've had these lawmakers preach to them like these kids don't know anything, like their parents don't know anything. They've watched in the gallery as these lawmakers, you know, play around on their iPhones and don't do anything. This frustration, and that, for the younger folks in particular, they haven't fallen into these tribalism traps that the older generation has. You know, they're not infected with the same kind of partisanship. They see good government or bad government. They may not understand all of the nuances, but they understand what they're looking at enough to make informed, wise decisions here. And I think that this idea that the backlash, if there is a backlash, I think it's going to continue to grow against
many
lawmakers.
Many of them will be voting in the next couple of years.
Yeah, so. Or this year.
That's true. Now, Oklahoma is getting ready to switch to the use of nitrogen gas to execute people on death row. This would allow the state to resume executions after nearly a four-year hiatus. Department of Corrections Director Joe Albaugh says the first ones could happen before the end of the year. Ryan, we know you're not a big fan of death penalty as it is.
That's an understatement.
But what do you think of the use of just nitrogen gas for executions?
I think it's an experimentation. There's not been a... It's untested and unproven among enlightened societies. This is the state of Oklahoma experimenting on human beings in a way that we really don't know how this is going to play out. You know, 46, that's the number of recommendations from the bipartisan Oklahoma Death Penalty Review Commission. They concluded that there were troubling aspects of the death penalty system in the state of Oklahoma. 46. Not one of those has been addressed. The Attorney General, the Department of Corrections, all of these folks that have put these, that are in charge of this right now, but the only one that's elected so far that's talking about it is the Attorney General, Mike Hunter. He hasn't said a single thing about those 46 recommendations, and yet now we're just, you know, rushing out with these new protocols to try to get folks back into the death chamber so that we can experiment them on new and untested methods. That's very disturbing. You know, we have this commission that sat down and studied failures in the process, not just in the way we execute people, but in how we choose whom we are going to execute and whether or not we can guarantee as a state that we're not executing innocent people. I don't think that we can say that. I know that there are very likely innocent, there's at least one innocent person, if not innocent persons, on death row today that would be subject to this unproven execution method.
Neva.
Well, I think what we have is Attorney General Hunter doing what he's charged to do, and that basically is to follow through with what he called the most profound application of state power. I mean, there has to be a protocol. There has to be a method to do this. The voters 2 years ago made it clear that they wanted the death penalty as an option when it proved that it was the proper use based on going through the court process. And so I think public sentiment is going to be very much in line with this, that they want to see at least the protocol and the mechanisms in place to move forward with these executions in the prescribed manner. And so I think what we see with Attorney General Hunter and Corrections Head Joe Albaugh just moving forward, doing their job.
Well, and I would say, I agree with Neva that a majority of Oklahomans can come up with a situation in which they think that the death penalty is an appropriate punishment. And, that's where I and a majority of Oklahomans disagree. But I know that that's where a majority of Oklahomans are at. I think the question, though, isn't whether or not Oklahomans can contemplate an instance in which the death penalty is warranted, but whether or not they trust this current government to administer the death penalty at all, to make sure that we're not executing innocent people, to make sure that we're not executing people in ways that have disproportionate impacts on communities of color, on people that have lower incomes, and that whenever we do execute somebody, that we're not, so even if we get past that they're not innocent and we're not discriminating on race or income or gender, then, are we able to administer it in a way that is not cruel and inhumane? The state of Oklahoma has failed on every single one of those counts thus far.
And Neva, when do we start turning our view of corrections reform toward also people who are on death row, who might be on death row and innocent?
Well, I think there is that process that's already in place, and we've seen in multiple instances where advocates have come forward. There's been a strong effort to try to try to really deal with this, and particularly from those folks that are opposed to the death penalty. So there's clearly there are clearly groups out there and individuals out there on both sides of this. But from the state standpoint, in doing what is proper and in the proper manner, I think what we're talking about here is finding the way to do this that is in an effective and humane manner, finding a protocol to do it, and in this instance, I think they have a plan. They're moving forward, and we'll see how long it takes for that process to finally come to fruition.
It's not been made official yet as of this recording, but it looks like a special election in Pennsylvania could flip a congressional seat from Republican to Democrat. Connor Lamb is expected to win in a district which President Donald Trump won by nearly 20 points. Neva, after this and Democratic wins in Alabama and Virginia, should Oklahoma Republicans be concerned?
Well, and I think it is still too soon to take a take a big overarching takeaway from these special elections. I mean, we've had 9 special elections since the 2016 presidential campaign and election, and clearly what we do see is the enthusiasm gap. I mean, what we saw in Pennsylvania, like many of these other special elections, is that the Democrats have done a very good job of being able to mobilize and have a higher turnout among their voters than Republicans. And from that standpoint, I think that is the thing that Republicans nationwide have to begin to look at, because as we all know, I mean, statistically, in first midterm elections, I mean, the out party tends to do very well. So, Democrats are poised to have some opportunities here. Whether that becomes a tsunami and they run the table and we see some, very major shift in terms of numbers in Congress, that remains to be seen. I think when we look at this particular race, it really looks at the fact that all politics, as I always say, is local. I mean, you had a candidate that really fit the profile with the district, really meshed, did well, and was able to capitalize on all of the things, and even go so far as to be able to say that they would vote against Pelosi. I mean, do things that really appealed to those voters, but really kind of flew in the face of establishment politics in Washington. So I think we have a very fluid landscape, and it's going to be very interesting to see. I'm not so sure it has that much, you know, direct impact in Oklahoma coming up, but it certainly has a bigger impact, I think, on the national picture.
Right.
I think if you're a Democrat and you're running for office or you're thinking about running for office, 2018 is the best year that they've been able to look at in recent memory. Especially in a state like Oklahoma. I mean, we're seeing strong Democratic candidates emerge. We're beginning to see the final push of the realignment in the urban and rural areas, where rural areas are becoming more solidly red in Oklahoma, and the metropolitan areas are becoming more solidly blue. We're seeing that in state legislative races. But I think in congressional races, right here in Oklahoma County, Oklahoma, Pottawatomie, and Seminole County make up the majority of, they make up all of the 5th District. The 5th Congressional District, that's currently held by Congressman Steve Russell. Kendra Horn challenging him. Kendra's got a primary, but I think that she'll come out of that primary likely without a runoff. She's doing well in raising money. She's got a strong organizing campaign around that district. And this is the kind of district that I think is destined to not be Republican for very much longer. I think that most of us most political observers would have thought, well, the 5th will probably change, but it's going to be well after 2020. Steve Russell has been a pretty weak member of Congress. He's been extraordinarily tied to this administration. I think that there's going to be a lot to hold as both a referendum on him as being a national politician and not paying attention to local matters. And you've got Kendra Horn, who's going to just work incredibly hard and run a very smart campaign. This is a district that I think that in November, whenever folks are talking about unlikely wins, this could be one of them.
In 2006, during the midterm election for President Bush's second term, of course, Democrats took over the Congress, took over the Senate, and they actually took over every statewide elected office in Oklahoma. So Republicans certainly can't be complacent here.
Oh, absolutely not. And I think the big issue for Republicans is getting the enthusiasm level up. I mean, getting Republicans energized and mobilized, where right now the Democrats are having a much easier time of that. And that is the case oftentimes when you have someone that they see in the White House, just like Republicans for 8 years, had the opposite.
Well, not just
effect.
Like Republicans.
Well, the Obama factor versus the Trump factor. I mean, there's similarities in the White House in terms of someone to point to that becomes kind of the focus and the attention getter. And I think for Oklahoma, in the June primaries in particular, Republicans have to do a very good job in what now appear to be very crowded primaries that the Democrats are not experiencing at the statewide level, at least at this point. And will that help them really get their base out and be able to continue to move forward into November and have that momentum? That's going to be the real challenge, I think.
Meanwhile, Oklahoma Democrats have always been notorious for snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Can they organize enough to do something here?
Well, I mean, they've got to be able to capitalize on the sentiment that's happening politically right now. I think that Democrats have done a better job in the nominating process recently. Republicans have a primary problem. They nominate
where you used to be 50 years ago.
They're nominating these folks that are so far out of kilter from what's winnable in a general election that they set themselves up for failure. And I mean, I think that happened in Pennsylvania. I think that they had a candidate there that wasn't a great candidate that came out of that Republican primary. I think that Democrats have been nominating very strong, solid contenders for the most part, and that's where I see a real difference. These primaries where Republicans marginalize themselves in order to get out of the primary and then walk into the general election, they're very susceptible to attacks from Democratic opponents.
Now, we've always talked about how elections are local anyway, so it's really going to come down to the candidates.
That's right.
A controversial Senate measure to put strict regulations on medical marijuana fails to get enough support to move on to the state house. Senate Bill 1120 by Dr. Irvin Yen would not allow medical marijuana to treat post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, or depression. Ryan, many supporters of State Question 788 are very happy to see this bill die.
Yeah, I mean, I think that on one hand, we have to recognize that Senator Yen's assertion that State Question 788 is really recreational marijuana. It's just not. I wish it was, but it is not recreational marijuana. It also, I think, this idea that we should be narrowing the scope of things that doctors should be able to prescribe medical marijuana for, I think that that's the wrong direction. Doctors need to be making those decisions in consultation consultation with their patients and using the best medical evidence available. They don't need to be doing that from the Capitol, even if the author of the legislation happens to be a doctor themselves. They're not seeing all these patients. They don't know. The other thing that I think is worth considering, though, is that there are worthwhile changes that need to happen before State Question 788 goes into effect. Otherwise, we're going to have an implementation problem that could delay the medical marijuana program in Oklahoma for maybe over a year even, right? Even if this passes at the ballot box, you know, we could be in a situation because of implementation problems, namely that right now it's housed at the Department of Health, which is in a major crisis. I think that we need to really think it from the legislative standpoint. I know that there were some legislators who valiantly fought to preserve the integrity of the ballot box to ensure that the thing that the voters signed is what they get to vote on. And, you know, normally I'll do that. In fact, on this state question, I went to court with the ACLU to defend the ballot language from a rewrite from the Attorney General. But right now, for those that are supporting medical marijuana in the state of Oklahoma, I think that they're smart enough to know that if this goes forward and passes without some sort of implementation and regulatory measures that come out of the legislature this session, we're going to see a delay in how this is actually rolled out in Oklahoma.
Neva?
I think that I think the big issue with the Yen bill was exactly what was said over and over, that it was bad public policy, basically, to preempt the voters from making their decision first. But I agree with Ryan, and I think there are some bills moving through the process that have good possibility for passage. I think Representative John Paul Jordan, I think Senator Greg McCourtney and others, you know, working with, you know, multiple folks at the table, the medical community, the DA council, the different versions of bills that have been coming through the process at the legislature, trying to come up with, you know, with a plan that actually can be in place. So as you say, Ryan, so anticipating after the vote takes place, if it does pass, then there are ways to implement and not just, you know, be back to scratch and ground zero.
Yeah, Oklahomans for Health said they're working with John Paul Jordan to make, so there is actually, there are bills out there that could actually do.
And I think they are moving, from my understanding is they're moving through the process, and I think in a very deliberative fashion, which is what it's going to take if ultimately they're going to get something done before the end of this session.
And yeah, and there is a big difference between undermining the will of the voters by doing something that would, you know, take away from the spirit of State Question 788 and the legislature getting ahead of this deal. And that's, we've seen that with other state questions. The liquor questions that passed in this last ballot box, you had statutory changes that were passed, and in that language it said it will not go into effect until or if the state question passes at the ballot
box. Absolutely. You've got to deal with the regulatory issues and all of the other, you know, components to that in a very practical, pragmatic way.
Because for people to understand, if this passes come June and there's nothing in place, they don't meet again until February unless they have a special session.
Right. And
the last thing we need is another session.
And a lot of that could go to the agency that's supposed to house it.
Right.
And they could do a lot of that regulatory work themselves. But right now, that agency is the Department of Health. They're under state and federal investigations. They've got a huge fiscal crisis over there, missing money.
They've gone through two directors.
Two
in
directors.
Like 4 months.
So that's not the place where this needs to be. You know, the law requires them to stand this thing up, I think, in 30 days. That's just unrealistic right now. So if the legislature can pass something that's responsible, that still encapsulates the will of the voters and putting this on the ballot and then ultimately passing it, if that's what they do, and I think that's what that will happen, that's different than monkeying with the ballot box here.
There you go. Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.